Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. You know we're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. I've been away for a few days, went down to visit some friends in the District of Columbia. And every time I come back, after I haven't seen you guys for a while, it makes me so happy. And then we all come into the studio and we talk about things that everyone else out there in the world is reading, emailing to their friends, and we put it all together in a little segment that we call The Most. The most music has started.
Can I nominate someone to go first?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I'm looking at Matt Martinez.
All right.
He's a supervising senior producer.
Yes, I am. And my most is from Reuters, one of the most emailed. Woman claims Victoria's Secret stole her bra. No, not the company actually went into her bedroom, stole her bra. She actually designed the very sexy 100. She claims she designed the very sexy 100. Way strapless convertible bra.
You can wear this bra 100 different ways? I think that's the headline. The
50 are on the outside, so you know.
The story didn't go into such detail.
Sorry, it's okay.
She designed the bra after she had her triplets, and she went crazy looking for a bra where, you know, the straps wouldn't show, and she wanted to wear it to her triplets christening. And so she designed this bra. She patented it. She developed a prototype, made a DVD. She realized how much it was going to cost to produce this thing. So she sent a DVD and a patent to the folks at Victoria's Secret, the parent company, Limited Brands Incorporated. And didn't really hear anything back from them. And then she was shopping at Victoria's Secret and she goes, huh, there's my bra. And so she's suing Victoria's Secret for ripping off her bra.
I had a friend who was in industrial undergarment espionage.
That's a big business.
Well, he told me. It turns out he was actually a cross-dresser trying to cover up. But yeah. Well, Jeannie, everybody
needs a strapless convertible. My story was most emailed, one of the most emailed on Yahoo News. It turns out the guru of the stars, famed astrophysicist Stephen Hawking, says primitive life is more likely than not to exist right here in the corner of our very own galaxy, right here at home. He says the vast size of the universe just makes the odds very likely. And he made these remarks as part of a lecture series for the 50th anniversary of NASA, and he says it is vital to inspire support for space exploration. He says we can do this with going to the moon, a lunar base, a visit to Mars. But as far as intelligence life goes, he says it's not looking so good, at least not nearby. No one has responded to the signals we've put out, which rules out an intelligent neighbor within 100 light years. And as for folks who say that we've already been visited by aliens, he says, why would they only appear to cranks and weirdos? Nah.
I trust him. He was on The Simpsons once. That's credibility.
Yeah.
He's definitely one of those guys that everyone says is smart and no one knows why.
I wonder how far he could push it. I mean, what's the most outlandish thing Stephen Hawking could say without being questioned?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he's pretty careful. Yeah. Pretty careful in his statements, just very likely.
Okay, I'm going next.
Do it.
I'm going to talk about one of the most viewed articles at CNN.com. It is a look, an assessment of the fashion of the women of the fundamentalist polygamist compound out in West Texas. You know, we've seen images of these women over the last couple of weeks, and so this article, kind of in a flip way, but is kind of looking at how these women dress and trying to make some greater statements about them. I mean, the only thing you can really say is that they're kind of trapped in time a little bit. I mean, their clothing evokes the turn of the century in the 1950s, and they put their hair in these French braids, and French braids are not in, except for gymnasts.
We're disputing your timeline here. We don't think it looks 1950s.
Yeah, it's
here
not
in the
1950s.
That's what they're saying.
It's more
that
like 1850s.
Maybe the hair.
The turn of
that big
1850s,
hair.
And then but there's something about the puffy sleeves is like 1950s.
I'm seeing like Anne of Green Gables. That's just me.
Yeah. To me, it seems like 1970s. Well, that one show, Little House on the Prairie, that was on in the 70s, right?
So that's there you go.
Yeah, it's totally
70s. They're
saying
that Chloe Sevigny, am I saying her name right? If you've ever seen Big Love on HBO, she's really nailed that look for them. So that's good. Let's move on quickly. Trisha.
I have one of the most popular stories at Reuters.com. The Australian state of New South Wales is requiring people now to have permits to carry high-powered hand lasers, you know, those laser pointers?
Yeah.
Apparently because people have been flashing them into the sky and blinding pilots. So now you have to have a permit, or
serious
you can.
Business.
Or
it
you
goes
can,
that far?
Yeah, you know, I know I've heard stories about pilots here in the U.S. complaining about being blinded by these pointers, and I think there was some dispute about whether or not they actually were being blinded by them, but apparently in Australia, I guess they've decided they are. So now you have to have a permit, and you can go to jail for up to 14 years if you carry a high-powered pointer without a permit.
And irony would be like, your cell could be here, point, or here, point. With the pointer, you see, that would be irony.
Yes.
Irony is an inversion of the expected. Dan Pashman!
Hey, how are you?
Yes.
I got a most email here from today's New York Times science section. John Tierney has an article about David Blaine, who is about to attempt to break the Guinness record for longest time holding your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to try to break it live on Oprah.
Wait, on her show? Or?
Yeah. The Tierney totally buries the lead, though. It's like the last paragraph. He says his formal attempt will come April 30th in front of a live audience on Oprah. But I was most interested, I mean, I find David Blaine mildly annoying a lot of the time, but I was most interested in the science behind holding your breath for so long that when Harry Houdini held his breath for 3 minutes about 100 years ago, people thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Now the record that Blaine's going to try to break is 16 minutes.
Oh,
and,
my.
And they're confident he's going to do it. I mean, he basically already did it for Tierney and stopped right before breaking the record just to be like, ah, I'm going to save it. I'm not going to do it for you.
But even wanting more. Yeah, free divers do.
Right, free divers. Originally, it was thought that a free diver, in the 60s, researchers calculated a free diver. Free diver means diving without any oxygen, without anything.
And you're not looking for anything. You're just trying. It's just a breath-holding contest, essentially,
right.
And how far it could go
they
down.
Thought people, in the 60s, they thought you couldn't go deeper than 165 feet. Now they're going down more than 600 feet. And it starts with, there's certain rituals you go through to prepare your body for this. It starts with a slow, steady breathe up, followed by exhalations to purge carbon dioxide from your lungs, and then a final series of quick gulps of air called lung packing.
Well, you ever see that French movie called The Big Blue about free diving?
No.
Okay, spoiler alert, the guy could be part dolphin.
That's all you're saying.
Here, and one of the most emailed stories on NPR.org right now is UK surveillance laws raise privacy concerns. It turns out that local councils in Britain are using covert surveillance legislation designed to combat terrorism to investigate such petty offenses as underage smoking and breaches of zoning regulations. This came to light after a couple went public after learning they were tailed for 2 weeks to verify that they lived within the boundaries of their 3-year-old's school district. And here is that report from Vicky Barker in London.
Jenny Payton and her partner Tim Joyce of Poole in Dorset always knew the downside of living in one of England's most desirable harbour towns would be fierce competition to get their 3-year-old into the best local school. But at their placement interview, they were shocked to hear local officials reciting intricate details of the family's daily routine. That's how they learned Poole's town council had used the 8-year-old Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, or RIPA, to follow them for 2 weeks to see if they cheated on the school's residence requirement.
It's been a totally outrageous use of legislation.
Not just outrageous, Payton says, but unnecessary.
They could have come and knocked on our door, they could have asked for more utility bills, they could have done anything. Instead, they asked for our driving license, took the details of our car number plate, and they then used that to initiate the surveillance.
In fact, what Poole Council did was perfectly legal, and as privacy campaigner Simon Davey says, it's become routine in Tony Blair and Gordon Brown's Great Britain.
The government, 3 years ago, introduced legislation which eliminated all distinction between criminal offences. So now you can be compulsorily DNA tested for littering.
More than 1,000 new spy cases are launched each month to track underage smokers, dog walkers who don't clean up after their dogs, and others suspected of relatively petty crimes. All the councils have to do is satisfy government regulators the surveillance is necessary and proportionate.
If your child didn't get into a school and you think some other parent has cheated, believe me, you're going to think this is a proportionate use of the council's powers.
Richard Clayton, a security expert at Cambridge University, says there are limits. Councils can get phone records, but they can't, for instance, tap phones.
You can't go telephone tapping in order to work out whether or not somebody's throwing sweet wrappers away.
Theoretically, those who feel their privacy or human rights have been violated can appeal to a special tribunal. A spokeswoman concedes that in the 7 years of the tribunal's existence, only one such appeal has succeeded. But then all those thousands of spy cases generate just a few dozen formal complaints each year. Simon Davies, the head of Privacy International, says the roots of that seeming apathy run deep.
The British value their privacy, but they also value public interest. When they are instructed by government to understand that privacy and data protection are enemies of the public interest, people will err in the favour of the public interest.
Bouncing gently on their double-decker bus, a group of London commuters sit in the semi-sullen torpor of rush-hour crowds everywhere. They ignore the full-sized video screens flashing live images from the vehicle's security cameras, just as they've come to ignore the CCTV cameras in train stations, airports, and city streets. With 4.2 million surveillance cameras, one for every 14 citizens, and the world's biggest DNA database, this is the most monitored democracy on the planet. A few years ago, Britain's own information commissioner warned his countrymen and women they were in danger, in his words, of sleepwalking into a surveillance society. Now, he says, they're already there.
And that was Vicky Barker in London. You can get a link to that and all the stories you hear on The Brian Park Project and on The Most at npr.org/Brian Park.